Newsmakers on the Federal Drive.
Postmaster General Patrick Donahoe.
We are going to lose money again this year for two reasons. First of all, just like the economy, our revenue's down. There's economic pressure on us, plus electronic diversion, people paying bills online. And over the last 4 years, we've experienced a 20% drop in mail volume. But in that time, we would have turned a $1 billion profit if it was not for some mandates that we've got with Congress that need to be addressed this year.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive.
Continuing congressional coverage is brought to you by United Technologies, trusted to carry you to the top of the world's tallest skyscrapers, across oceans, and into space. More at utc.com.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of the Armature Corporation, providing consulting, application development, and business productivity solutions on the Microsoft platform. Federal Tech Talk is the show that opens up the world of technology to the federal government. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts to help you understand some of the IT trends and challenges that your agency may be facing. Federal Tech Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Now your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we have Peter Smith in the studio. He's the Chief Operating Officer for a well-known company called American Systems. Good morning, Peter. How are you today?
Good morning, John. Very well.
I've got a wide range of listeners here, everyone from generals in the Pentagon to maybe interns over at different agencies and organizations. And people always scratch their head and they say, I'm interviewing with Peter Smith. How did he ever wind up there? How did he wind up at this difficult position at American Systems? Maybe you can share with our audience maybe how you wound up with American Systems.
I'd be happy to. Thank you, John. First, a little bit about American Systems. The company was founded in 1975. Our headquarters is located in Chantilly, Virginia, and we have people working in several locations in the United States. We support our customers in our national priority markets of C4ISR, acquisition and logistics, readiness, citizen safety, and national security. And we provide engineering and professional services and solutions into those domains. We are primarily a government contractor. About 95% of our revenues come from work with the federal government. Last year, we did about $275 million worth of revenue, give you an idea of the size of the company. Something we're very proud of is we are an employee stock ownership plan company. All of our 1,000 folks are employee owners, and they're very proud to be there. ESOP, yes. Thank you, John. One of the things we pride ourselves in is helping our federal customers solve their problems. We know what's at stake. We know what their missions are, and we work with them very closely to make sure that they're successful in executing their missions. How I got there? I've been in American Systems since 1980.
You're like employee number three or something, huh?
Pretty close. I'm from Massachusetts originally. I responded to an ad in the Boston Globe for test engineers on the Trident submarine program up in Newport, Rhode Island. And I spent a couple of years up there, great times being a young engineer, working in the shipyard, climbing around on submarines. And then I moved down to Virginia in 1981. And have been down here ever since, supported any number of programs, working a lot in the submarines, as I said, moved on to surface ships in the Navy, communication systems for the Army, IV&V on software systems for State Department, some work in DOJ. So been around the federal marketplace for a long time. About the year 2000, some of my friends would say I went over to the dark side and started working for corporate and took responsibility for profit and loss in programs, more program management. And now I find myself the COO.
Wow, that's a lot of headaches there.
Oh, it's a lot of fun, John. It really is.
I'll bet. When you first described the company, you talked about enterprise solutions, and these are large-scale solutions. And I think that's really a focus of the conversation here today. There are people who are undoubtedly listening to this thinking, okay, well, American Systems, what do? They work in enterprise and have solutions. Well, you know, what do they do? Well, they have a lot of projects where they collect data from various different sources and can take and bring that data together to enable people to make decisions about that. That's a real nice generic-y sounding statement, but that's really what American Systems specializes in, has done a lot of that over and over and again. And let's just take one example of this. This is a spot contract. I was at your website this morning and a press release about the spot contract, and you're pretty proud of it. But it's an enterprise type of an application where it gathers data from a wide range of sources to generate reports. And this is a challenge just in and of itself, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is, John. The SPOT program, SPOT is an acronym that stands for Synchronized Pre-Deployment and Operational Tracker. And the need for this system really grew out of a very simple question that was asked of the Department of the Army. How many contractors do you have in theater? Sounds like a relatively straightforward question.
The easy one, right?
Sure. But the data sets associated with answering that question are so widely distributed. Think, first of all, the number of contractor companies that might be involved in theater, and then multiply that by the number of contracts that they're working on, and then multiply that by the number of people working on those contracts, and you can get a feeling for how widely distributed that data set might be. So the original challenge, the original response to the challenge was very much one of getting on the phone, calling up contractors, finding out what contracts they were working on, working with program offices, building lists. The lists turned into flat files that were collected in Excel. Those that were collected in Excel started to turn into databases that were small and disjointed. And the answer started to grow in that way. One of the problems was they were very successful. They did begin to answer the question very well. And those questions led to other questions. But because they found themselves with these flat files and this unintegrated space, it was very difficult to respond to additional questions that were asked. So they were actually victims of their own success. Around that time, they brought in American Systems to think about how can we build an architecture that will scale with the requirements of the program as we go forward. So we had two challenges at that time. We had to work. We needed to continue to be able to answer questions using the existing baseline system, and we also needed to set up an architecture to take them forward and build our changes into the architecture that was emerging so that we could transition at some point and move the whole program forward.
But if you take a look at that from an enterprise perspective, whether the enterprise is a Ford Motor Company or whether the enterprise is FEMA, FEMA's got to know who's in Joplin, Missouri right now.
Yes.
That may be a question they may ask. Huh? I mean, there may be people in Department of Transportation who want to know where vehicles are that are Interior may want to know where vehicles are all throughout the United States. So I think that the concept of taking different sources, different standards, different structures, and bring them all together, it's a difficult skill because it's changing so quickly. And this is the dynamic part of it. It's changing just as we're discussing it right now, aren't they?
Yes, it really is, John. As you can imagine, there are owners of the data sets that we're talking about. And those owners have set up their data sets to meet their mission requirements, which may not jive well with the mission requirements that you're bringing to them for the larger enterprise. So we're very mindful and very careful of those existing data sets and recognizing the mission that they need to continue to accomplish. So we like to define the interface as well, saying, look, if you can just give us the data that we're asking for in the syntax and with the technical interfaces that we agree to, that's all we need. And from there, by all means, continue to execute your important mission. We will take your data set into our larger set of data and then do the analytics on that. So it really is three steps. First, get the data you need. Second, aggregate that data into a broader data set. And then third, develop the analytics to answer the questions that are being asked of the broader enterprise.
And this is something a half world away in a secure environment.
Yes.
So let's just make it a little more difficult here, huh?
Yeah, security requirements are always, always in the mix. And we have actually in the SPOT environment, we have an unclassified version and we have a classified version. We've worked hard to make sure that the data sets line up well and that, as you can imagine there, we're running two separate sets of data. We have to make sure that they match. We have to keep them in sync and we have to make sure that we're giving consistent answers regardless of which domain you happen to be in, the classified one or the unclassified one.
But it's been successful and it's working right now.
Yes,
and
it is.
It's overcome a lot of the hurdles with enterprise architecture. And I think even when you touch on enterprise architecture, I just have this mind full of all these acronyms. I mean, I think of FEFA and this and that. And it's just a world of confusing acronyms. And I think a person just trying to study it really should maybe study the success you've had with filtering out what flavor of enterprise architecture would work in a dynamic environment like this.
Yes. What we've very much tried to do is generalize the concept. In this particular instance, we're tracking people, no doubt about that. But anything that you're trying to keep track of in pretty much any enterprise that you've defined have very good applications in this area. It could be trucks. It could be medical supplies. It could be virtually anything. In fact, this project itself, the Spot Tracker, is expanding out into areas of contractor-acquired property as well, considering how to track that equipment in the theater as well.
And I think the lesson here, where I work to talk about lessons learned, well, the lesson here is if you can hurdle a barrier of security halfway across the world, wide variety of standards and sets, then you can take that lesson and apply it to buildings or to other individuals or a piece of hardware, trucks. It's almost a negotiable type of a skill set.
Yes, very interchangeable. And I think the true mark of success is establishing an environment where, as I said, folks within the enterprise can accomplish the missions that have been assigned to them, yet still provide data to the higher enterprise to keep the answers flowing at a higher level. So you gave the example of a building. It might be a campus-wide set of buildings that you're trying to keep track of energy requirements or something like that. And then the campus might fall into a larger educational system or something like that as well.
Take a quick break. When we come back, talk more about gathering this information and maybe using a different type of web instead of the Web 2.0, use Web 3.0 and try to manage this information, maybe automate some of the collection of it all. John Gilroy here with Federal Tech Talk on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio today is Peter Smith, Chief Operating Officer from American Systems.
If you know the symptoms and get the facts, you'll know the signs of a heart attack. Women, listen to me, and when I'm done, if it sounds familiar, call 911.
Pain in your neck, chest,
arms, the jaw,
shortness of breath.
Please tell us more. Cold sweats and nausea, tiredness.
It's time to take it serious.
Back pain, stomach pain, shortness of breath. Cold sweats, nausea, dizziness. If you know the symptoms and heed the signs, you'll be around for a long, long time. Women, listen to me, and when I'm done, if any sound familiar, call 911.
Learn a song that could save your life. Get a free download at womenshealth.gov/heartattack.
Women, listen to me, and when I'm done, if any sound familiar, call 911. If any sound familiar, call 911.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
911.
It's the Geico Gecko with a little hello to all you federal employees. Now, in government, there are people on all points of the political spectrum, but there is one thing that everyone agrees on. Saving money is good. Which brings me to the big news. GEICO offers discounts to most federal employees GS7 or above. It don't matter if you're a Democrat or an aristocrat, left wing, right wing or a chicken wing. If you're a federal employee GS7 or above, you could be saving a lot of money on your car insurance by switching to GEICO. So no matter if you're blue or red or in my case green. If you're a federal employee GS7 or above, contact GEICO and see how much you could save. Isn't that right, Mike?
Exactly right, my little green friend. Hey, folks, this is Mike Causey. And like the Gecko said, discounts are available for most federal employees, GS7, the equivalent, or above. Just call GEICO at 1-800-947-AUTO, go to geico.com, or visit your local GEICO office to see how much you could save.
For America's wounded warriors, sometimes coming home can be a battle in itself. Every one of them needs our support to meet the challenges they face every day. The USO provides Americans a way to offer that support to our wounded warriors and their families. Join us. Visit USO.org to learn how you can make a difference in their lives. The USO. Until everyone comes home.
Do you know the difference between virtualization and cloud computing? Are you clear on the truth and myths surrounding virtualization and what federal managers need to know now and for the future? Tune in on Wednesday, June 22nd at 1 p.m. to hear those questions answered by industry experts and government leaders from the Census Bureau, USPS, and the Recovery Accountability and Transparency Board. That's Wednesday, June 22nd at 1 p.m. on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, sponsored by Microsoft and Citrix.
The Performance Improvement Council, in partnership with the Department of Defense, would like to invite all federal employees to this year's Performance Symposium in Lansdowne, Virginia, June 27th through the 30th. The symposium will feature sessions led by leaders from across the federal government. Focus areas include performance, strategy, budget, and more. Spots are filling up fast. Please go to live.i6sigma.com to register with the code FEDERAL2011 or email info@pic.gov for more information.
Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio with Peter Smith, Chief Operating Officer from American Systems, we're talking about the big subject of collecting large amounts of enterprise data and trying to make sense of them and trying to make sure they're current and trying to gather these from a wide variety of sources with different standards and structures. And we talked about that in the first block. I just want to make the jump here. And looking at my clock here, it's about 8 hours in the day. And if you have, I don't know how many employees, 500, 1,200 employees, let's say, there's a 40 hours a week they can work. There's just there's a limit to how many hours they can put in mining this data. I mean, there's got to be a way to automate it or something. You know, I mean, an electric drill is so much easier than a manual drill. So I think that's what the web is changing into, from Web 2.0 to Web 3.0, and using this thing, this big fancy impressive word called semantic. But it really is a practical term, isn't it? Tell us about how this semantic technology and the semantic web worked with data collection.
Sure. Thank you, John. Backing up to go forward, back in the day, a lot of flat files put together, and the analysis of the data was very human intensive. People needed to look at the data, perhaps, you know, speaking in Excel terminology for a minute, set up a pivot to get a better look at that data and draw some relationships between the various elements, rows and columns that made up that space. And as time went by, moved into the relational database word, where keys were very important and setting up the correct keys to answer the appropriate questions were very fundamental to relational
database. It's like Little League and then high school ball. Yeah, that's
sure.
What's going on here.
Yeah. Sure, exactly. And the limitation of that approach is that you very much need to know the questions in advance to make sure that you have the keys and the relationships set up properly within the database. So a relational database is very, very solid in terms of answering questions that you've already thought of. It's when you develop new questions and you have to reassign the relationships within the database that it gets more complicated. And as you all know, we have people that do that very well also, and they've done a nice job keeping up with that. But again, it's human intensive, which brings us to the idea of the semantic web. Taking some of that, or a lot of that thought process, out of the carbon-based processors, the people, and putting it into the silicone-based processors or the machines. And in order to do that, you really need to be clear within that domain about three things in a three-tiered storage environment, if you will, of entity one and entity two, and then the relationships between those two entities. If you can capture that in the machines or in the databases, then the processors have a much better chance to draw the conclusions that you're trying to develop. So that clearly is a step forward. We're starting to see things like that in databases. If you think about them that way, things like LinkedIn and Facebook that allow reaches across any number of data sets to draw these conclusions, if you will, and make develop impressions, if you will, about large groups of individuals and specific people as well.
So you can use that concept and describe it in many ways. You can describe it as a meta tag. I guess you could describe it as some kind of a tag that a human can read and a machine can read. So if a human can read, a machine can read it. A machine is going to be faster than a human in some ways, as long as everything is done correctly. So that's where the Web 3.0 comes in with this gathering of data. Is that right?
Very much so. Right now, we're very much in the relational database domain, but moving the architecture forward to put us in a position to do that. Again, it's very interesting. To get to those places that we're talking about with the technical solutions, a certain amount of contractual policy things have to take place as well. Getting the enterprise that you're talking about to think this way and to develop their contracts. So there are requirements to develop the data sets and the relations and store those across a wide number of areas. And then allowing developing the standards so people know what you're working towards as you go forward are important parts of this. So it really is something that has to go in as a mindset very early on in the development, the design and development process.
So if you try to keep the end in mind, the end would be a dashboard or scorecard based on the data. Is that right? I mean, that has to maybe you start with that in the beginning. How is this going to look at the end?
Absolutely. And thank you for bringing that up, John. That's very much how we approach our customers. Rather than tie them up in the engineering lexicon, if you will, we start with what do you want to see? Really, what type of insights would you like to develop across your enterprise? And what would that visual representation of that be? And then how do we stack it behind it, going all the way down to the data sets to make that a reality for them?
And if you take a look at what's going on in the real world today, we have 72 million smartphones in the United States. It looks like there's smartphones everywhere. And people in the field in your world have smartphones too. All of a sudden, bang, throw another variable into that. So you think you knew you're going to collect all the data from. Now you have to worry about not only data in different places, but different ways that it's aggregated with mobile devices.
Sure. It's great having these devices in people's hands because they are so readily available to them. To feed data into the system is what they excel at, no doubt about it. And recognizing that currently these devices are getting faster and faster, the pipes that connect them are getting broader, but they are relatively limited when we're talking about a computer that's attached to a high-speed internet connection at this point. So you really need to be conscious of the processing capability limitations of the smaller devices, as well as the smaller pipes that they have. And again, this is more important when we're talking about pushing information towards them as opposed to bringing data from them.
When you look at data being collected and distributed, you can look at a lot of different things. Look at humans. You can also look at energy and looking at different ways to gauge and find what's going on in different energy applications and identities as well. And what I'd like to do is maybe take a break and after this little break, take these concepts that you've mastered as far as collecting data and apply them to metering energy consumption and finding out what energy consumption is all about. And then maybe it's okay if you can do that with transformers and voltages. Maybe you can do it with humans as well and talk about identity management and taking this concept of enterprise and applying it across the board to all kinds of different applications. This is John Gilroy with Federal Tech Talk on Federal News Radio 1500. Today we're in the studio with Peter Smith, Chief Operating Officer from American Systems. We're looking at enterprise data collection and see how it can apply to a wide range of activities.
What if learning a new language was as easy as watching your favorite TV show or playing your favorite video game? What if, while you were having your morning coffee, you could learn how to speak or read a new language? Well, now you can. Introducing an all-new, more powerful Rosetta Stone. Developed to fully immerse you in your new language, the all-new Rosetta Stone software is now easier than ever before. You can learn your new language on your computer, then practice in your car or on your smartphone or MP3 player without ever opening a book or memorizing a single word. It's never been easier to learn a new language. And to celebrate, Rosetta Stone is giving away free demo CD-ROMs of their all-new language immersion technology. To get yours absolutely free, call now, 1-800-900-2599. Immerse yourself in your new language. Call now and receive your free demo CD-ROM of the all-new Rosetta Stone software. 1-800-900-2599. For your free demo, call 1-800-900-2599.
The Pentagon and Beyond, brought to you by Airink.
2 years ago, WTOP reported that drug traffickers were using jumbo jets to move drugs across the Atlantic to a new hub developing in West Africa. We also learned at the time that submersibles were being considered. Now, according to the United Nations, some drug cartels have already begun using submarines bought on the open market to move drugs across the ocean. The UN Office on Drugs and Crime says corrupt institutions and lax law enforcement in some countries are allowing it to happen. I'm J.J. Green.
Solar activity, which causes geomagnetic storms in space, can impact everything from over-the-horizon radar, often used for aircraft and missile launches from a long distance away, to submarine detection systems, to two things we've come to rely on, our cell phones and GPS. AirInc has developed a space environmental impact tool that advises, before it happens, what will be affected by bad weather in space. For more information and career opportunities, log on to ARINC.com.
Stress. Sometimes a little of it can be a good thing. It can motivate and inspire us. But most of the time, stress is not our friend. Work stress can cause depression, headaches, sleep problems. It can increase your risk of disease and on-the-job injury. At Kaiser Permanente, we believe that stress is serious business. Because when employees are stressed, everyone suffers. So we promote programs that help employees deal with the demands of work and home in healthy ways. Like stress breaks, workplace yoga, stress relief classes, and more. It's a total health approach. That's what Kaiser Permanente does for employers that choose us. Provides tools for companies to keep employees healthy, less stressed, and more productive. Find out how a Kaiser Permanente plan can help your employees and your business thrive. Go to kp.org/thrive9to5.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated, 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
Don't miss the first annual Backgammon Beating Cancer Tourney, Saturday, February 26th, to benefit the wellness community, providers of free programs of emotional support, education, and hope for people with cancer and their loved ones. Beginners to experts are welcome. For more information, call David Ogden at 301-717-7166. For more information about the wellness community of Greater Washington, call 301-493-5002. All programs at the wellness community are provided free of charge.
If you know the symptoms and get the facts, you'll know the signs of a heart attack. Women, listen to me, and when I'm done, if it sounds familiar, call 911.
Pain in your neck, just
arms or jaw,
shortness of breath,
please tell us more. Cold sweats and nausea, tiredness,
it's time to take it serious.
Back pain, stomach pain, shortness of breath, cold sweats, nausea, dizziness. If you know the symptoms and heed the signs, you'll be around for a long, long time. Women, listen to me, and when I'm done, if any sound familiar, call 911.
Learn a song that can save your life. Get a free download at womenshealth.gov/heartattack.
Women, listen to me, and when I'm done, if any sound familiar, call 911. If any sound familiar, call 911.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we have Peter Smith in the studio. He's the Chief Operating Officer from American Systems. We're talking about a big topic here, the whole idea of collecting data in an enterprise situation, widely ranging sets of structures and standards and sources, and trying to drive information from that. We talked about collecting data on humans, talked about collecting data on people. And towards the break we just took, we touched on metering and collecting energy usage from different types of meters. I mean, this would be another application of enterprise data collection. And you've done some work in that area, too. Is that right, Peter?
Yes, we have, John. There is an important initiative in government, as we all know, to go green and to improve energy consumption. The Navy is doing nice work to get out in front of this to increase their green posture by the year 2014. And an interesting thing emerged. Really, before you can understand how well you're doing in saving energy, you really need to understand where you are in using energy. So you need a good set of meters to establish your baseline. There's been a lot of activity in the metering market these days. Smart meters are coming out. These are meters that you can connect to a networked environment, and rather than having to come up to read them, the meters will send you information about consumption. You can also send control information back to those meters.
That's the key. It's two-way. That's the key.
Exactly. Very much information out, control back down to those sensors. But having those baselines well established and thinking about it, you can only monitor what you're measuring. So by having those measurement systems in place, it puts you in a position to monitor them, and it puts you in a position, more importantly, to manage them. So the work we're doing in these environments are first at the building level, then at the campus level, and then aggregating campuses. So
There's various, a theme here. Believe it or not, there's a theme I see here.
Keeps going up. The enterprise keeps growing and growing. So it gives the responsible parties good insight to what's going on in a given building. I mean, we're talking about measuring things like gas usage, electric usage, steam usage, water usage. So if you can see what's going on across your campus and you notice that one of your buildings is using an inordinate amount of electricity, perhaps for heat, perhaps the answer is to go in and improve the insulation in that building. So now you've got a point problem that you can solve that's specific that will affect your posture across that entire campus.
It goes back to the principle earlier in the show. We're taking that information and building a dashboard on it, and all of a sudden you look at 10 different characteristics and you see, oh, building A's got a problem. Forget about the first nine. Just focus on that problem. The dashboard allows you to manage that information more effectively.
Very much so. And if you think about that dashboard as a visual representation, it might even go so far as to be a map of your campus. Because, you know, we were talking about balancing out the need for processing information, whether it's machine-based or human-based. Humans work much better in a visual domain. If they can see a picture and there's building eight and it's red, they know where building eight is. They know what it is. They can get there quickly in their mind. They can visualize what's going on and do a good compare and contrast across the whole environment.
So that's what your AVID product is. It's the visual product. Is that
yes.
Right? AVID?
AVID stands for Analysis of Visual Intelligence Domain. It is a mouthful, and that's why we have abbreviated it to AVID. But again, the idea there is to put visuals in front of people that they can process quicker than rather than looking at a set of numbers and drawing a conclusion from there, having the computer help them get to a place where if they exceed a threshold, perhaps it goes from green to red. And that helps them see more quickly what's going on in the environment that they're trying to control.
There may be some listeners here who are trolling over to your website, americansystems.com, and reading the press releases and maybe the white papers and maybe getting confused about a dashboard versus an information portal. Give us a quick rundown on comparing both of those, and how are they different?
Fair enough. The dashboard truly is a representation of what's going on at a high level across a wide variety of inputs. We've been using the case of buildings. The portal is the access point or the jump-off point that allows you to drill down further into what's going on into specific areas. We do like we were talking about aggregating the data, aggregating the information, bringing it to a common point. Part of the analytics is giving you a high-level visual about what's going on, but then you'd use the portal to go the other way, to drill down further into the data sets to get it to get the information you might specifically need for a specific problem.
To jump back to the start of the discussion, we talked about human beings and trying to figure out how many human beings are in a certain theater at any given time. I guess this focuses in on identity intelligence, which is kind of a going round circle. We went from humans to buildings to electric meters back to the humans, which is gathering information on individuals in order to make decisions quickly. If you're pressed into an emergency situation and you have to find all the people on your team that has a certain skill set, it can be a lot easier with a dashboard than going through a file cabinet, isn't it?
Yes, very much so, John. Certainly, and it also ties back to what we were talking about with relational databases and the semantic web. As we move out of relational databases more towards the semantic web and we have those relationships that we were talking about between data sets, this person might have this capability or this set of capabilities associated with them. So knowing where they are and what they can do, which might live in the past in two different data sets, is very powerful to bring together because you can more quickly understand who you have, where you have them, what they're capable of, and move those people around to support your needs very quickly.
Example I always give is the people in the United States who speak Portuguese, a whole bunch of them are in Massachusetts. Who would have thunk it, huh?
Yes.
Big group of Portuguese speakers in Massachusetts, near where you went to college, aren't they?
Yes, they are. Yes, they are.
No one would have known that. Now, if you have to gather a whole bunch of people who maybe speak French or for Haiti or a certain skill set who know maybe civil engineering or have certain certifications in civil engineering to send them out to Joplin, what's the fastest way to do it?
Yes. Looking at your data sets that you have available on the folks that are resident around there would be a very powerful tool. And allowing the machines to do a lot of that processing for you rather than sifting through data is again, very powerful.
And the way you do that is by using machine-readable and human-readable types of tags or meta tags, or what would you use to do that then?
just as you said, it would be that tagging of that data, the relationships being identified that you're trying to bring forward. Right now, again, with today's technology, a lot of prior planning has to go into that thought process. What might you want to know in order to be able to get those quick answers? The idea with the semantic web is to have those relationships in place beforehand and let those be more easily derived so you don't have to be that smart going into the problem.
If we have disparate databases and we hook them together, how's that for a technical phrase? So a bunch of different databases, different silos, hook them together and come up with a common user interface. Sounds pretty easy on my little notes here. I work with software developers all the time. They beat their head against the wall to do this. This is not something they want to do. They run from projects like this, but this is exactly what we're talking about doing.
Yes, it is. And it does take a methodical, disciplined approach to getting that done. No one has the luxury of starting with a clean sheet of paper these days. Like we said, there are very important organizations doing very important things, living in larger enterprises as they are called upon to provide their data to that larger enterprise to answer bigger questions. This is where we run into those issues. I designed my database this way. You designed it that way. Your set of standards are equally as good as mine, but they're different. How do we bring those two together? Again, a methodical, disciplined approach to doing that telegraphs to everyone where you're trying to go and what you're trying to accomplish is very powerful. One of the biggest tools in our toolbox that we see in getting that done is a good definition of the interfaces. People kind of roll their eyes when you talk about interface design specs. They aren't that glamorous, but they do serve a very important purpose. And the way I like to look at them is they really set the developers free. Because as long as you comply with the requirements of that interface, you can design behind that interface whatever you need and however you want to go to get your work done. So it rather than a limiting element, it really is a liberating element.
One element you have to contend with is cryptography. What role does cryptography play in gathering data, speeding it up, slowing it down, making it more difficult? I mean, where does that all fit in the mix here?
Well, it really is something that we have to, again, knowing what we're being faced with going in helps us understand how that might affect us and what we might do to overcome it. I like to tell people that some of these problems will be solved by technology, and technology might not be there yet. So it's very important to understand the technology that you have today to be able to solve today's problems. Now, having said that, you have to design for the future as well. So you don't want to design yourself into a corner, but you also don't want to find yourself just stymied by something that really hasn't been solved yet. And it's really not in your charter to solve it. Cryptography is one of those places where we can move from one domain to another domain without violating any protocols or any policy. We're very comfortable doing that. So it's important to recognize those policies and protocols as well. But it's also sometimes you just cry uncle and say that one's too hard. We're going to move forward without that data set.
Makes sense. Now, in the Department of Defense, there are certainly different ways to describe data and a whole wide range of enterprise architectures, plural. Is there one that's kind of raised its head over the crowd, or is it just kind of is a horse race right now, or is it just we're just too new in the whole concept of moving to the Web 3.0 to know what standards, what architecture is going to be in place for the next 10 years?
My opinion there, John, is it's relatively new. What we try to do there is allow for flexibility. There are certain sets of standards that you could argue are reasonable. Let's put it that way. There are other ones that really are just starting to fall by the wayside, and we're encouraging people to stay away from those. But middleware is an old-fashioned term that's been around a long time and sometimes gets a bad name. The way I look at middleware, though, is it ought to be a means to an end, not an end in itself. So if you find yourself with competing standards and you can develop some good middleware to bridge those gaps between the different standards in the short term, that's a very positive thing to allow the standards to shake out. And as they do shake out, you can go to the native mode of whichever one might dominate as time goes by.
And come up with a common user interface that is common and will allow for comprehensive data collection.
Yes.
Great. We're going to have to take a quick break. We come back, talk more about this serious subject of collecting data from a wide variety of sources and trying to make sense of it, enterprise data collection. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Peter Smith, Chief Operating Officer from American Systems.
And now Ask the CIO, brought to you by Vion Corporation.
Luke McCormack is the CIO of the Immigration and Customs Enforcement. He says a new approach to oversight is helping to create a closer relationship with their agency customers.
We've put together a governance structure so that we have much more closer to the ground type governance, I'd like to call it, where we're segmenting that by business area within ICE and allowing much more interaction about decision-making authority on the various projects.
CIOs and IT directors, are you paying for capacity services that you're not using? Take a good look at your capacity services contract, and next time, make sure you're not signing just another lease. Ask the experts. Vion Corporation, you can create a plan so that you only pay for what you use. When your job is on the line with data storage decisions, that's the way to go. With a 30-year partnership, Vion and Hitachi Data Systems have been bringing you innovative technologies with integrity and quality service. Visit Vion.com to learn more. That's Vion.com.
My name is Abe Lincoln, and I've been thinking about this cool place that you can go. It's a website that I speak of called USA.gov. It's government information online, and that's mighty fine. USA.gov. Got questions on your log cabin? Housing answers, yeah, they have them. USA.gov is your official source. Get Social Security info, whatever that is. ID theft prevention tips, because that's your biz. Even change my address, and I don't mean the Gettysburg. Find government auctions, jobs, apply for student aid. Hey, I wouldn't lie, I'm honest Abe. It's government made easy for the people. Take it from the dude in the stovepipe hat. USA.gov is where it's at. So don't wait 67 years to check it out. And that, my fellow Americans, is what I'm talking about.
Profile America, Tuesday, June 21st. As of 1:16 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, summer is here. While welcomed by many, it's a season with mixed blessings. On the one hand, there are trips to the beach and mountains, boating, cookouts, and wearing lighter clothing. On the other, it's also a time for crowds, bugs, higher gas prices, and higher temperatures. The highest thermometer reading ever recorded in the U.S. was 134 degrees Fahrenheit at Greenland Ranch, California on July 10, 1913. Next highest was 128 degrees 17 years ago at Lake Havasu City in Arizona. Among larger cities, Phoenix, Arizona holds the record at 122 degrees. You can find these and more facts about America from the U.S. Census Bureau online at census.gov.
The Federal Drive is every weekday from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m. Hear interviews, news, perspective, and analysis from Tom Temin and Amy Morris. The Federal Drive team will help give you the important information you need about the federal government and how it impacts your organization or agency. Tune in 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. or go to federalnewsradio.com. The Federal Drive is sponsored by CDWG. CDWG, the people who get it.
Here's another question from the Geico Savings Mailbag.
Jason from Buffalo writes, I have a habit of hitting snooze and not being able to get up again. Any suggestions?
You know, if you get Geico to help with your renter's insurance, it's quite easy, really. You'll know you're protecting your stuff for as little as $12 a month, which I suspect will make you sleep much sounder. Then you'll just pop out of bed rested, ready to start your day.
What he's saying is, a renter's policy is basically insurance for your snooze button.
Plus most everything else you own.
Visit Geico.com to see how affordable renter's insurance can be.
Celebrate summer and support the Boys and Girls Clubs at Safeway's Barbecue Battle, June 25th and 26th on Pennsylvania Avenue. This great family event features the nation's best barbecue, along with 30 great rock, R&B, and blues bands, plenty of free food samples, celebrity chefs, contests, prizes, and more. Easy to get to by Metro. Call 202-828-3099 or visit bbqdc.com. See you at the barbecue.
Connect with Federal News Radio wherever you are. Like us on Facebook to see the hottest news stories on your wall. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/FedNewsRadio. Download our free iPhone app. Just go to the App Store and search for Federal News Radio. And now, connect to the radio station straight from your cell phone. Just call 712-432-6616. Go to federalnewsradio.com and search for social media for details.
Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Peter Smith, Chief Operating Officer from American Systems. We've been talking about some really geeky, nerdy topics here for the last 20, 25 minutes. Maybe lighten up a little bit here, and maybe Peter's actually a human being. We'll ask him some human being questions. Up close and personal, here's my technology test for you, Peter. You ready?
Ready.
Okay. Year of your first computer?
1985.
Ooh, it's kind of late to the game.
Yes, it was.
Late to the game, okay. First cell phone, year of your first cell phone?
That was probably a little better. That was probably 1989.
In the game there. Operating system on your machines at home?
Vista.
Vista. Of all the things, the first Vista ever. Wow, that's strange. And your home computer connection, a T1 line, satellite, what you got going into your house?
Cable.
Cable, okay. Do you have a smartphone or feature phone?
I have a smartphone.
How many apps on the phone?
Wow. Off the top of my head, I'd say 10.
Okay. Do you own a tablet computer?
I do.
Okay. And here's the question. The last book you read, was it a piece of paper book or electronic?
It was electronic.
Electronic. Well, what a mix there. You know, I don't know if you're technically, my nerdometer was going for the nerd, then went back and nerd and back, and I don't know where, so what book was it?
It's, I'm actually in the middle of it. It's a spy book called, oh, John.
Okay. Wait, it's a spy book. They're going to be fun. I thought it would be more a technical book. I view those types of readers as more for technical books than the novels and the history that I read for fun or the spy books that I read. I like them in paper, but everyone's got a different preference for that. Back to the serious interview here, talk about data visualization and talking about enterprise data collection. You've been doing this for many years. You've been with the company in the early parts, and you've seen all kinds of people come and go. And give me three challenges that you have faced, that my listeners would face in tackling a job like this. Disparate sources of information, put them all together. Give me two or three maybe best practices or lessons learned, maybe mistakes you've actually made and corrected over the years that maybe could benefit my audience so they don't go down the wrong path.
Sure, John. One of the biggest things is recognizing that when you're bringing data sets together, you're really bringing organizations together. And that there's a tremendous social aspect to that. You really need to talk to the people that you're trying to bring to the table, show them the benefits to them as well. Picture it, you know, you're coming in from an enterprise level. You come in with a statement like, I'm here from corporate and I'm here to help. You see the eyeballs roll.
Mm.
You need to get those folks comfortable with what it is you're trying to accomplish. Get some buy-in to what the data is going to be used for. And also what might be in it for them as well. We use terms like being a good corporate citizen, being a good enterprise citizen, coming to the table with an open mind, breaking down those walls that say this is my data. Recognize that these folks have a mission to accomplish and they're passionate about their mission and they need to be in a position to succeed as well as help you with what you're doing. You know, we've always heard a term in the past called stovepipes, and that's had a very negative connotation. We like to refer to them as cylinders of excellence.
Instead of a silo, it's a cylinder of excellence.
And within those cylinders, very important work is going on, and you have to be appreciative and sensitive to that and recognize that those missions still need to go on within those cylinders of excellence. So bringing those together, supporting a higher goal is what that's all about. That's probably one of the biggest. The second one is, and it's related to that, is once you get into the technical domain, you need to be sensitive to what we were talking about before with standards. Standards are emerging at all times. They're in flux as time goes by. Some are more stable than others. Try and be sensitive that you might have to work with a family of standards and work over time to get to a common set as time goes by. Give people and organizations the opportunity to come into alignment. In other words, don't come in and be very rigid from the start. And work with all the tools in your toolkit to get as much integration as you can in the early days, and then work to more native mode type solutions as time goes by. Those are probably the top two, and they really go to allowing people to recognize what it is you're trying to do and then move closer to that place.
Jesus, it certainly isn't make sure you go online and get a certificate in cryptography and then make sure you have three other certificates. And it's almost the opposite of what was happening 10, 15 years ago. I think 10, 15 years ago, there was emphasis on technical competence and certification and knowledge and your MSCE and your Network Plus certification. And what's happened is it's become humanized. It's almost assuming people know that stuff. Now, we assume you know the technical stuff. The technical stuff is assumed there. We worry about the relationships and the stakeholders and having people see the vision, which is it's a soft skill set for the U.S. Army. I mean, you're not dealing with, you know, a bunch of dancers in Boston or, I mean, you know, fifth grade girls learning how to dance. These are Army people over there risking their lives. I mean, so this is a hard and a soft skill set that you have to have in order to accomplish what you did.
That's a great way to put it, John. It really is a lot of we look at the technical baseline as those are your minimum credentials. That's what you need to get in the game to start having the conversation. Said differently from, you know, the mathematics perspective, that's necessary but not sufficient. You have to have that, but that's not all you can come to the table with these days. You have to bring in the skills, the softer skills, as you were talking about, showing the larger enterprise, showing how things come together, showing how having those bigger data sets and the analytics across those data sets will do things like make the enterprise more efficient, save money, bring resources to bear in a more efficient manner, things like that.
I'll read between the lines here. There are companies who have tried this and have failed. And I'm certainly not going to name names, but there's large organizations with smart people who've gone in and failed at this. It is not an easy task. I mean, enterprise data collection sure sounds easy, but it is awful hard to complete and finish the project. Just gathering requirements is difficult, especially in a situation where your hands are tied with cryptography, your hands are tied with clients that are 4,000 miles away. And maybe this is the differentiator for American Systems. Maybe it is a mixture of understanding the human part of data collection.
That's a great way to put it, John. What we try to do is put our customers in a position to succeed. That is considering all of the elements, not only the practical engineering elements and hardcore technical specs that you have to deal with, but also making sure that they have the script that they need to speak with any number of constituencies. We talked in the past earlier today that you can talk some very nerdy stuff in this area, but when you're trying to get buy-in from an HR department or a trucking department, they don't want to have the conversation about the data interface standards. They want to have the conversation of, okay, what are we trying to solve here? Why do you need this data? What are you going to do with it? What does it mean to me operationally, practically speaking? Those types of conversations have to be held as well. And you need those scripts. You need that information. It's equally as important as the discussion that says, all right, we've gotten by all that. Now how are we going to make these two data sets talk?
I have a friend who is a CIO at the Heart House, deals with doctors all the time. These are pretty hard-nosed people to get information out of and draw requirements from. You got to get them from generals. Go after a doctor, then go after a general and try to get information out of that in order to find out what the data set should be, what the disparate elements are that we should bring together. That's it's a different skill set from the nuts and bolts, from the setting up the VLAN and TCP/IP and redirecting a DNS completely.
It very much is. And we were talking off mic a little bit about how the idea of speaking to people in their domains is so important. You don't want to talk to that general about, you know, TCP/IP or something like that. You want to have an operational conversation with them. You know, sir, we understand this is the mission you're trying to accomplish. We think we can bring you data that will help you support that. More importantly, information that will help you support that mission. And here's the value add. Of you coming into the enterprise and allowing us access to your data sets, because we can improve it and give you faster answers, more accurate answers, things like that.
AmericanSystems.com, get more information on the company. You can download a lot of different press releases. It talks about the spot contract. It talks about advanced metering infrastructure, kind of a two-way way to get information from meters. Talks about human beings as well and how to get information from human beings in a changing environment. We just have about 30 seconds here. You want to give us the future of this Web 3.0 here in just 30 seconds? Where do you think it's going to head? Is it going to change a whole lot, or is the security concerns going to lock it all up now?
I'm very excited about the future of the web, John. I think we're just beginning to understand what these distributed data sets can accomplish for us. And by us, I mean all of us. And the activities that we can see across the commercial market may drive what's going on here.
Great. You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we had Peter Smith in the studio, who is the Chief Operating Officer from American Systems. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of the Armature Corporation, providing consulting, application development, and business productivity solutions on the Microsoft platform. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk, Tuesday mornings at 11, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.
Find news about federal information assurance and new information from various agency CISOs and CIOs on the Federal Security Spotlight on federalnewsradio.com, sponsored by Cisco.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWTFM HD2 Manassas, WTOPFM HD2
Washington. This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to the 2011 Federal Executive Forum Series on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today's show will discuss healthcare IT progress and best practices in the federal government. Here's your host, Jim Fleisig.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Jim Fleisig. During today's show, we will discuss critical issues facing government and industry leaders in using information technology to improve healthcare and healthcare services. With me today on the show are Dr. Doug Fridsma, the Director, Office of Interoperability and Standards, Office of the National Coordinator for Health Information Technology, Colonel Han Pak, the Chief Information Officer, MedCom, G6.